Welcome to the Kelly Cardenas Podcast, where attitude is everything. On today's show, right when I got on the phone with this young man, it was probably about 3 weeks ago. It was almost like he jumped through the phone. It felt like he was right next door to me, and he's got a really cool accent. The accent made me mad, though, because I don't want to hang out with him all the time, because if I do, then people will think he's really cool, and I'm just his normal friend. The optimism that came through the phone on that day was so incredible. He was so inviting and so engaging. And I remember the thing that hit me the most is he's got a phenomenal top-rated podcast called the Traveling Optimist Podcast. You can find him on TikTok as the Traveling Optimist, Twitter, Steve Odey, Facebook, Steve Odey. He has Citrus Travel. But the thing that stuck out to me the most, more than the fact that his great podcast and his phenomenal company that helps you to travel all over the world and be able to get in, go to crazy adventures in Africa. He said Africa, and then he was like, and road trips in America. I don't know if we should put those in the same sentence. But the thing that stuck out to me the most was when I asked him about the podcast and I said, you know, where is the emphasis? What do you want to do with it? And he said, honestly, I don't care if there's a million views or a million listens. I just want to make sure that I affect at least one person, and I know I've done my job. So this man really changed my outlook, because it was not about all the things that he was doing. It was about the people that he was impacting. So please welcome to the show, Mr. Steve Odey.
Thank you, Kelly. How are you doing?
I'm doing amazing, man. Now the listeners can hear that incredible voice. And seriously, like with your accent, you could sell anything. You could be like, hey, I've got poop and you need to buy it. And in your accent, everyone would be like, wow, poop is so cool.
Oh, my God.
So I think it's amazing, man. You know, you have this optimistic view. And I know it's a brand. You have that Traveling Optimist and things like that. But talk to us about that optimism, because it's real. Like when you experience you, it's real. Where did it come from?
Oh, bless you. Well, thank you so much. You know, and also thank you for that amazing introduction as well. I've never been introduced before like that. But yeah, you know, optimism isn't something that's all sort of rainbows and unicorns or anything like that. You know, it's a very real thing, but it's something that's been in me since the day I was born, I think. And I think that really seeing through life through the lens of optimism is really is being a realist, but also knowing that at the end of a tunnel, there's always some light, and we live for that hope, for that light at the end of the tunnel. Do you know what I mean? That kind of sums up optimism for me. And it's always been there for me. I've always, even from a, you know, when I was young, I was influenced by some really incredible people, you know, in my family. And that kind of optimism has sort of topped up every...
Well, talk to me too, Steve. I mean, because when you were saying you were born in that way, did your parents, did your mom, did your dad, did they have influence on this? Were they telling you things very early on that helped this? Were there sayings that they had that they said over and over again to you?
Well, the person that had a big impact on me was my grandmother. So she was an optimist. Oh man, she was an optimist. I mean, this is a lady who had. She contracted tuberculosis in the 1950s, and she had to have one of her lungs removed. Now, that was a big operation in those days. Like, it was, you know, touch and go whether she'd survive. And it took like over 2 years for her to convalesce after this big operation. And so she's like led a life full of joy, really. So she was a complete optimist in her life. And she sort of gave that philosophy into me. And I was going through a rough time when I was young, because when I was about 8 or 9, I grew these horrendous buck teeth, and in the 70s, and my mum, bless her, okay, and you'll appreciate this as somebody who loves hair, my haircuts were like, I was like a girl. And so I was this 8, 9, 10 year old kid with buck teeth. And I had a haircut like a girl, and you know, my family were not particularly wealthy or anything like that. I didn't go without as a child. You know, there was always food on the table. My dad worked really hard. My mom worked really hard, and you know, my grandparents used to knit jumpers for us at Christmas and things like that. We didn't really have all the things that kids nowadays have in terms of the things and the objects that they get. But I did have a lot of love. And my nan, she was just the most beautiful person. And so when I was getting bullied because of my buck teeth and my looks, she always used to say, you know, these times won't last very long, Steve. They won't last. You know, they'll pass and then everything will be fine. And I've kind of carried that philosophy through, and I think she really put the foundations in. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, Steve, it's great to be able to hear it, because I find a lot of times when people are overly optimistic or they are, they have this outlook on life that they can take on anything, or they want to help people. Most of the time, they've gone through traumas themselves, and hearing that trauma from you, I just think is very encouraging, because an optimistic guy like you, a light like you, a lot of times people turn a deaf ear to us because they think, oh, everything in Steve's life is perfect. Everything is, so talk to us too about, when this happened, when you said that you got the haircut, was it short in the front and long in the back?
Yeah.
Explain it to us.
I'll have to send you a photograph. Yeah. So it was a parting on the side, and it was really long at the back, and it was just really all smooth and very, very just like a lady's haircut. Right. But at the time I didn't realize it, but I look back at the photographs now and I think, oh my God, that's horrendous. No wonder I got teased mercilessly, but it's just what it was like, really. I'm not sitting here saying, oh God, things are bad, because what my nan used to be able to do, she used to be able to encourage me to sort of almost compartmentalize that stuff that was going on in my life and move towards people who were nice, who were like-minded. Okay. So she used to just encourage me to just move away from those people and find people that, you can get on with and that are, be your friend for who you are, not the people that keep teasing you. And so I built up this kind of resiliency, really, I think, when it comes to stuff like that. I don't like people that are bullies. I get quite angry when I read stuff that people are doing to other people, and I just think that's just not kind. And, I don't bear any grudges to the people that did it. They're all very young and stuff at the time. I'm sure they wouldn't be like that to me now or whatever. I used to seek out people that were like-minded and kind and caring and, wanted to do things together. And, so I found solace in things like going on my bike rides with my friends. We used to live in an amazing part of England called the Peak District. And so we would cycle, me and my friend Craig, we'd spend all day at the weekend, out on our bikes in this countryside, cycling up the hills, down the dales. I sought solace by playing team sports as well, because I knew that the other guys in the team, they were on my side. And so they would never, they're not into all of the bullying side of things or taking advantage of a situation which other people might do. And so I had a, as far as I think, I had a pretty decent childhood, really, and I loved it,
This episode is proudly brought to you by SamaritansFeet.org. I met Manny, a homie, probably about 4 or 5 months ago, and this man had such an impression on me. He told me that when he was 9 years old, he had lived up until that point without shoes, and he won a contest, got shoes, and it changed his whole entire life, inspired him to play basketball, inspired him to get a Division I scholarship playing basketball and succeed at a high level in his life. He then got to a point where he was so successful, but he was looking for purpose in his life. Samaritan's Feet serves and inspires hope in children by providing shoes as a foundation to a spiritual and healthy life, resulting in the advancement of education and economic opportunities. When I asked Manny, why shoes? Why did you think that this would be so huge? And he said, to provide a tangible foundation of hope and the opportunity for a better life, to prompt children to focus in school and families not to worry, and to protect feet and decrease the possibility of getting a foot-borne disease. Since 2003, Samaritan's Feet and its partners have distributed over 8 million pairs of shoes in 108 countries and over 440 U.S. cities. And that's why I'm so proud that SamaritansFeet.org is one of the main sponsors of the Kelly Cardenas podcast, because making this world a better place is our rent for living on this planet. Well, I think it's incredible, man, because your outlook is absolutely tremendous. When did that, like, I think a lot of times when we go through something like that, and our nan, you say your nan, I called her, I have like a Grammy. Grammy was my mom, and then there's Nanny, and then there's, you know, all different ones. But Nan, let's go to Nan. When she first started giving you these, you know, ways to be able to combat the bullying, at first, obviously, Steve is feeling this, you know, oh, man, you don't know what you're talking about, Nan. Am I correct? Like, you can't understand what I'm going through. Talk to us about the point when it clicked and you started to be like, yo, Nan has got it down. And now I can just shun these things. I could stiff arm these, and I can move towards, like what you were talking about, I can move towards the people who are kind to me, who are amazing. And then things started to roll. When was that point?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to sort of take too long over it, and people might get the wrong impression that I'm seeking a woe is me and things.
No, but no.
I think that, you know, it took a little while, because when you're young, you even 8, 9, 10, you're seeking some form of independence, and you want to be able to do things on your own. And you know, and I wanted to be able to sort this problem out on my own, and I just wasn't able to, you know. And so when my nan kept saying things that these things won't pass, I was getting, you know, you come home upset, and you know, it wasn't nice. I can remember it. It's very clear. It wasn't great. But when the penny dropped, I don't know the exact date, but it, you know, I think suddenly something clicks in your mind, and your whole posture with people changes. You know, you become a little bit more, you know, you stand up a little bit taller, and you know, I wasn't going to stand up to these guys. I wasn't interested in confrontation. You know, that wasn't me. I'm not that sort of person. So I just drifted towards people that had fun, you know, and just like, you know, doing stuff because they liked you as a person. And so, yeah, that's why me and my mate Craig, we used to go out on Maker Sandwiches and go out for the day, you know, with a backpack on and cycle down these amazing places and spend the day. And it was like, that was kind of like being able to get away from it all, really. And actually, to be honest with you, I still find that with cycling now. I don't know if you do.
Yes.
You know, cycling is a very cathartic, you know, form of exercise for me. And it kind of becomes almost ethereal, really. And I guess that's kind of where, you know, why I feel like I do with cycling now, even as a 51-year-old, you know.
So Steve, with cycling, when did you go full spandex? Because that's not something that, I mean, right off the bat, like when we're cycling, when we were kids, right, we're riding our bikes. That's a different thing. But then you get to this cycling, which what you're talking about, and you have to go in. At some point, you have to go 100% spandex. I wouldn't do it. I didn't do it at first. I would wear board shorts. I was, you know, no way. And then I was like a parachute as I was riding. When, what point did you go full spandex?
Okay, so we call it Lycra here in the UK. So I went full spandex Lycra in 2012, right? That was it.
Was it a game changer for you?
Yes, it was. And I know that people think, all your listeners might be thinking, what the hell are you doing wearing Lycra? For God's sake, you're riding a bike. But actually, you know, it makes a hell of a difference. It really does. It's so comfortable. And, you know, the shorts that you wear, they've got pads in, and oh, it's so nice. And you can sit on the saddle for hours, and it's so great, you know, and you feel really kind of very aerodynamic. You know what I mean?
I'm telling you, the difference between, because I talked about it one time with Dr. Jeff Spencer. He's Lance Armstrong's performance coach. And I was telling him, I said, the first time when I went out in like board shorts and a regular t-shirt. And then I went in like a, you know, the little, I know it's politically incorrect to say this, but I can't get fired from my own show. So it's, in America, we call it a wife beater. That's a bad name. I know I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to get some comments on that. But it's the little white tank top. And so it's a little bit more contracted to your body. And when I rode, I was like, wow, I feel a little bit more free. And then what I did, Steve, is put the biker shorts underneath the board shorts and then rode out a half a mile from my house. And then I took the shorts off, put them in a backpack because I didn't want people to see me in full spandex, as you call Lycra. You know what I'm saying? But did you embrace
it? Well,
Did you embrace it? Okay.
Absolutely. I embrace it. Totally. Well, wholeheartedly, but not from the beginning. And now this is going to gross a few people out, but I used to wear, I don't know what you call them, but we call them pants or underwear underneath the shorts. And then a friend of mine said, he said, what are you doing that for? I said, well, I don't feel right going commando under these shorts, man. It just feels weird. I can't do it, you know? And he said, no, you've got to go commando. You've got to go commando. It's so great. And I said, no, I can't do it. It took me about a year to be able to do that, man. But afterwards, that was a complete game changer as well.
I tell you, and I don't know why, but I felt like when I went commando the first time, it felt as if I was riding faster too. I had more power. Yes. I was ready to do the Tour de France. I was ready to compete and win. Actually, those of you who know me, you know that I ain't winning nothing. I'm riding like 2 miles an hour and sometimes falling over on my back. Have you ever fallen over at a very slow speed while you're clipped in?
Yeah, I have. I've really hurt my leg. I slipped on some leaves, actually. I was doing a turn, right? I'm clipped in. I was turning really slowly, and the wheel just went from under me, and I went over. Oh, it was awful. Yeah. But I love riding with clipped, you know, with the clipped pedals, because you get so much more power. You can ride for longer, and it's so much easier on your legs, and oh, it's great. I love it. Well, but that was one of the reasons why I started cycling a bit more than I was doing. In 2012, I kind of went through a period where I didn't cycle that much because, you know, you learn to drive, you get a family, you know what I mean? It's like you don't have the time to be able to do it. But anyway, I got back into cycling. But me and my friend, we were like doing London to Brighton bike rides, you know, like 50, 60 miles. And then we were doing like the Ride London, which is like 100 mile you know, round trip kind of thing. So we're doing like big bike rides and training for that and stuff. So it made sense to, you know, wear some comfortable clothing, you know?
Well, I think that, you know, it's a big thing, whether it be cycling or even like the travel business that you have, like going into it and 100% committing, because when people are cycling and they are half cocked, when I didn't get the benefits of it. When you're, when like say in your travel business, when people think about, oh, well, why do I need someone to help me to travel? I can just, you know, get my own flight. Oh, I could get my own hotel. But on your level of the travel that you're doing, the people are committing. How much, benefit do you get when you go 100% commitment as opposed to going half in?
Well, the thing is, yeah, you've got to, I am like you, right? Whenever I decide to do something, I am absolutely 100% all in for it. Okay. It's the same with when I started the Traveling Optimist podcast. It wasn't something that I was going to just do a couple of episodes for. I wanted to be able to do it sort of for a longer term. And hopefully we can talk a little bit about why and what that's all about later. But, yeah. So with travel, if somebody, you know, you could go to, if you wanted to go to, take your family, okay, to Tanzania, okay, and to see the wildlife, right? If you wanted to do that, you could do that, right? But why would you want to do that? Why would you not want to speak to somebody that's been there and can talk to you about it in full, about every day, about what you're going to do, where you fly into, how long it's going to take, what it's like when you arrive, you know? So when you arrive in somewhere like Tanzania or Kenya or Uganda, the air is different. The people are different. It's just magical, right? It really is. It truly is. And like when you get in there, you kind of, the air is like liquid. It's the weirdest thing, but it's like you drink it in when you arrive. It's just incredible. And, you know, so you arrive into Tanzania and you've got Mount Kilimanjaro in the background, okay, which is, you know, the massive mountain that people walk up now and stuff. And then you can do loads. You can drive into the Serengeti. It takes you like a whole day to drive there. But you're going through the countryside. You're seeing lots of amazing things. And then you get to your camp and you might be a little bit nervous about staying in a tent, right? But these aren't like tents that you pitch up yourself. These are huge, great big canvas affairs, you know, with bathrooms and great big double beds and these verandas and overlooking the savannah and you know, and how can you describe waking up the first morning? I mean, how can you describe this without speaking to somebody or think about it without speaking to somebody and say, okay, getting up early at 5 o'clock in the morning after, you know, you don't want to do that normally and you're like during the day, but you would do it when you're in Africa. And the reason for that is because the bird song, the noises of the wildlife and the prospect of seeing something so magical like the sunrise over the Serengeti, okay, is just so inspiring. And the beauty of the countryside is, you know, something that you'll take with you when you leave, you know. So I went to Africa when I was, I don't know, 21, I think, 1991. And it took a piece of my heart, right? This is how I describe it to clients. It took a piece of my heart. It's there. So whenever I go back, I feel like it's home almost. It's really weird, but it's such a beautiful place and you'll be enraptured by its beauty. So if you wanted to go to Tanzania or Kenya or Uganda or whatever, if you wanted to book that kind of trip, you could do. But if you're better off speaking to somebody that's been there. You know what I mean? That's why.
Absolutely. So when a thing that stuck out to me in our first conversation was when you were talking about the fact that you didn't care how many downloads there were, so many listens, it was all about if you could affect one person. What it made me sit in for a while, it was about a week, Steve, you're on my mind, so I want you to know this, is you hit me with the fact that when you sit in and you do exactly what is from your heart, your audience will show up. That you don't have to sit in there, but there's so many people out there that are seeking an audience. Oh, I need to get this audience. I need to be loud. I need to do all these things. And it's like, I find the people that elevate at the highest levels have simply found who they are, set into it, and their audience shows up and their audience says to them, we've been waiting for you just to calm down. How have you been able to utilize this? Because that's exactly what you've done with the Traveling Optimist podcast.
Well, when I first started the podcast, which was last year, my sole intention was really, A, it was to get me out of a bit of a funk with regards to COVID and the fact that my travel business had hit a brick wall and I needed something to sort of channel my energies and my creativity down. And I thought, okay, let's do a podcast. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know what to do. I just read a few articles. I looked at a few YouTube videos. I bought myself like a 50-pound microphone, learned how to, you know, record, you know, on Zoom and stuff, and then how to get that into, you know, some software or whatever. And it was really just to help people who are in perhaps in a similar position, you know, because way back then it was all very new, this COVID thing, and, you know, people weren't quite sure what was happening. So the sole intention was to try and give people some advice and some help and say, look, you're not alone. Here's some thoughts from, you know, people that I know that might be able to help you get through the next couple of months. And so it kind of grew from there, really. And what I found was that I really, really enjoy it. I love connecting with people and I love talking with people and having, you know, relaxed, very, very relaxed conversations with them. And, you know, it's almost like we're going down the pub and having a drink, having a beer and just talking about life. You know, just talking about stuff. And just amazing. I just love it. And I've sort of grown into it. And whenever I speak to anybody and I edit my podcast myself, and I like to think that I really put a lot of passion into it and love and care into it, so that podcast then is a reflection, a true reflection of that person. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And so if you were to come on my show, I would spend hours making sure it's right. And I do like a pre-record, like an intro. After I've done the show, I would edit, really get to nail down a few of the details. And then I do like a pre-show introduction that I record separately for myself with my own thoughts on and interpretations of what you would say what you've said in the conversation. And I just get goosebumps every time I do it. I just do it. And I don't get that feeling very often with stuff that I do, but that really fires me up.
This episode is brought to you by one of my favorite companies in the entire world, the Mina Group. As one of the top culinary experiences in the world, celebrity chef Michael Mina and his team are dedicated to giving you what you never knew you always wanted. With 30 locations throughout the world, this company is focused on the one thing that truly matters, their people, and that is why they are your world of wow. Change your life by going to michaelmina.net. So can you tell us too, Steve, for the listeners out there too, can you give us a couple actionable items on how to stay? I mean, every person that's hearing your voice right now understands the introduction that I gave you. Okay. So when I was giving the introduction, people are probably saying, okay, well, who is this? Who is this that is that? Can he be that optimistic? But then you listen to your voice. Everything that you talk about, like, literally comes from your heart. And it's incredible to be able, even when you were talking about the early days and the haircut that you had and, you know, spending time with Nan, you still were speaking from your heart with an optimistic look at it. What are three actionable things that a person can do in their life right now that maybe they're dealing with some pessimistic thoughts, but to get them into that optimism, get them moving down that road?
Okay. So there's a few things. I could probably give you about 250, but I would say first things first, everything happens for a reason. Okay. And so trust the process. Okay. Just really trust the process. If something's happening in your life, it's happening for a reason. And I was told that by my coach, Louise Budgeon, okay, about 5 years ago. And when she told me that, it was like having a weight lifted from my shoulders, because I felt so much pressure that I was, am I doing the right thing? Yeah, okay, yeah, you are doing that right thing. It's what's happening, you know, you're doing the right thing now, okay? So yeah, everything happens for a reason, trust the process. I would say also, optimism is something not to be afraid of. Okay, because I think there's a lot of people out there that are too worried about being optimistic. They don't want to be optimistic. You know, they might be worried that actually if you get your hopes up, you're just going to get let down. Okay, well, yeah, optimists do get their hopes up, absolutely. And yeah, they do get let down. They do have challenging times. Okay, we're not, you know, superhuman. But I would say, really, if you can, go live your life through the lens of optimism, because it's such a happy place to be. You know, it just makes a difference. You know, it really does. Understand that, you know, sometimes when there's gray clouds above you in the sky, you know that the sun is beaming down above those clouds, and it's not that far away. So, and as I said at the beginning, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel. I would say, take the trip. Okay. Take the trip. Go plan to do these big trips with your family and experience new places and see new people and meet new people. I would say that is a very fulfilling, a very rewarding thing to do. I would say it's not just about the big trips. You know, I would recommend people take time out with their family. And even if it's just for one night, go out on top of a mountain and camp out and, you know, toast marshmallows by a campfire. And watch that sun go down on the horizon, you know, just, or go to the beach and sit down with a drink and just be together, you know, that kind of thing. And I think I think lastly, I would just say one word. You've probably never heard of this word before. It's called Ubuntu. Okay, it's an African word. Okay, and it means I am because you are. Okay, so I am here because you are, and it's all about connection. It's all about community. It's togetherness. It's kindness. It means that I can only grow, Kelly, and progress through the growth and progression of you. And I really believe in that. I really do. And I think it's something, I think it's something that Barack Obama said about Nelson Mandela and stuff as well. And it's an amazing word, Ubuntu. I think that's about it, really.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you're enjoying it. Now's the time to do some shameless promotion. This episode is brought to you by Squeeze Dried, a delicious, no-hassle way to get superfoods, vitamins, and nutrition. SqueezeDried.com. It's also brought to you by Cardenas Law Group, a high-level boutique law firm for all your personal injury needs. That's CardenasLawGroup.com. Thank you so much again for listening. Hopefully, you're continuing to enjoy the episode. So, Steve, what is the last thing that's challenged your optimism? And I'll give you an example, okay? So yesterday, I was recording a podcast. I was so excited. I got set up. I'm up here in Park City, so I'm not in my normal studio. And I got my studio set up here. I've got a beautiful view, absolutely beautiful. It's overlooking Deer Valley and the lake. And, I mean, it's pristine. It's perfect. It's paradise. I get my studio set up here. I tell my wife before, hey, I'm going to be on a podcast, so can you guys, you know, just kind of keep it down? My dog starts going nuts right when I start recording. My dog runs up here barking as loud as possible and hits the wire of my studio and knocks my studio off the table and bends the cord. And then I got people downstairs making all kind of noise, and I'm telling you, my rose-colored glasses turned a little bit dark. It's the human thing. Talk to us about the last time when your optimism was challenged. Because, I mean, I think of what my brother told me. He said, you know, Kelly, a lot of people, and he's such a wise guy, He said most people will be inspired by you falling as opposed to all the successes that you have, right? Oh. So because what it does is it makes you human, right? And you're one of the most optimistic guys I've ever met in my life. But tell us, has there been a time, and give us a specific, when your optimism was challenged and you had to use those things that you were talking about to get yourself back on track?
Well, okay, you're talking about your dog. Okay, so 5 minutes before we're on this podcast, my next door neighbor decides to get his jet washer out and starts jet washing next door. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is not good. This is just not good. This is a nightmare. Anyway, so I'm going, he's got to stop. And he stopped. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. I can't be so grateful. Thank you. And I'm just expecting him to start again in a minute. You know what I mean? But I think the last time that the big challenge for me was COVID. You know, and the fact that and a lot of business people out there around the world are experiencing this, their business hit a brick wall and there's absolutely nothing you could do about it. Absolutely nothing you could do about it. You know, so you just had to accept it. And I think this is the thing with optimists. We accept what's going on and then we look for ways that we can keep moving forward. Right. And so COVID was a massive problem for people in the travel industry and people generally all over the world. But I'm going to be specific from a travel perspective because that's been my life ever since I first traveled to Texas when I was 6 years old or whatever. If you've got, when there's no income coming in, you've got to start thinking creatively about what the hell you're going to do. Because one thing about traveling to Africa, it gives you perspective. Okay, so traveling to Africa means that you've seen true poverty. Okay, I've seen it firsthand. Okay, so it's given me a perspective on life where I appreciate having a roof over my head and food in the fridge. Okay. That's just big for me, because I've seen people that have, they just don't get any dinner. They don't, you know, the kids go to school purely to get one main meal a day. Okay. And that's why their parents send them to school. It's heartbreaking. Okay. And, you know, people are earning $1 a day. So it gives you a bit of perspective. So when I'm, when COVID hit, you know, I'm thinking, actually, do you know what? It's not the end of the world, Steve. Let's start thinking, what can you do? Okay. So, you know, after a few months, it was clear that things weren't going to go according to plan. You know, it wasn't going to just be over in a couple of months. So I had to start really getting serious, you know. So I was like applying for jobs, driving groceries, you know, around and stuff like that. You know, I needed to get out there and do something. You know what I mean? And this is what I think about, was where optimists, they understand the situation and they'll say, right, what do I need to do? And they say, right, okay, update your CV, your resume, send that out to like thousands of companies and see what comes up. And nothing came up. I said, right, okay, what am I going to do now? So I then sent a few emails to a few contacts I've got some consultancy work, you know? And so, yeah, I had big challenges in answer to your question. That was a very long winded way of answering, wasn't it? But yeah, you know, it was a big challenge. And, you know, I'm so grateful that, I can see things. I'm a very positive person. And yeah, you know, I've had some downs, a few downs. You know, it's a bit like riding a bike, isn't it? You know, you go out on a day on a bike, you go on the flat bits, you sort of plateau, you struggle up the hills, you know, your legs are burning, you have to dig in and stuff like that. But optimists know, I know that at the end of that hill, there's going to be an amazing view, B, the sense of victory in it and of being able to say that you've cycled up this huge mountain. And the third thing is, you know, that there's going to be a glorious downhill bit where you can just take your feet out the pedals and just go, whee!
So, Steve, every single optimist that I know, or even when I'm thinking about optimism, two things always come to mind. Number one is innovation. And number two is the ability to adapt immediately. Can you talk to me? Because when I think of optimism, right, innovation comes first in my head, is because, like you said, COVID hits, my travel business goes down the way. We were in the professional beauty industry and we've been in it for 29 years. Salons got closed. The speaking world for me was gone. All these things. So innovation, I had to start thinking a little bit different. And it was great because actually the next day after COVID, I was on Zoom speaking to places that I would have been traveling to.
Yeah.
The podcast started, things like that. So talk to me about those two things, innovation and the ability to adapt immediately, and how important are they not only in optimism, but just in being, having a fruitful life?
Well, I think adapting is critical. Okay. And part of adapting is always moving forward, right? You've always got to keep moving forward. And so when things hit the fan, you can't sit back, okay, and just just drift, okay? That's just, don't do that, okay? Do whatever it takes to keep moving forward. KMF, keep moving forward, right? But in terms of optimism, and people that are optimistic, I think don't have a problem with that side of things. You know, even when there's times when you're challenged to provide food for your family, okay, deep down you know that there's something really good going to come out of it, you know. And like, you know, I know I've got friends that have lost family. You know, there's been some real tragedies, and so I'm not being dismissive of people's situations in COVID, but I've used it as an opportunity to do some really incredible things. It's given me an opportunity to be on this amazing podcast with you, and which I would never have done if this virus hadn't have escaped. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be here now speaking to you. And so I'm so grateful that I've been able to use that time positively and productively.
Well, I think one of the things that stood out this morning before we started recording, well, a couple of things. I asked you if there was anything off limits. You said no, which is awesome because then we get to go to places that, you know, we're allowed to go anywhere. A thing that you said to me is you said for the last 3 days you've been going over our conversation in your head. I've been curious ever since you said that. What were the things that you were going over in your head?
Well, I was going through a conversation that you had with Matt Halloran, okay, because that had a really impactful, it was very impactful to me, your conversation with Matt. And I've had a conversation with him since, actually, and he's such a great guy. I love him. And one of those things that you were talking about seats at the table, right? Seats at the table of life. And I questioned that with him when I spoke to him about it. But I was, so in my head at night, I've been going, oh, I can't wait to speak to Kelly. There's so much I'd like to talk about, blah, blah, blah. And I was trying to think, you know, that seat at the table question is really important because actually what I'm all about is leaving that seat at that table of life in a better condition or in a better place than when I found it. And I think that's really, really important. And it's epitomized by, this is my thought process. So I'm lying in bed and I'm thinking this. I'm thinking, yeah, wow, yeah. The All Blacks are a rugby team, New Zealand rugby team. I don't know if you've heard of them. Do you know it? No, okay. So the All Blacks, they are like the best rugby union football team in the world. Okay, they have been for years. They're amazing. But what they have this incredible philosophy. And because they're from New Zealand, it's a very Maori thing, very cultural Maori cultural thing. And if you wear a shirt, an All Black shirt, if you play for the All Blacks, okay, you're wearing that shirt and you're honoring the players that wore that shirt before you. If you don't, you have to play well, okay, because that's a part of honoring those guys that have put the effort and the blood, sweat, and tears in previously before you wore it. And I see that kind of philosophy with that seat at the table of life. Okay, you're honoring your parents, you're honoring your grandparents, you're honoring everybody in your life that's had an effect, a positive effect on you and your life. And if you don't make the most of that time in your seat, you're doing yourself a disservice. But also, you know what, you're not honoring those people that have influenced you in your life. And I get quite emotional about it, actually, because I just think it's important.
Steve, is Nan still alive?
No, she passed away.
In the mid-90s. If she was here right now, what would you say to her?
I'd have to say thank you. And I just wanted to remind her that I love her very much. There's not a day that, you know, it goes past. You know, I think about those people that had a very positive effect in my life. My dad died in 2008 from lung cancer. And part of having, and I was so lucky to be able to spend the last 2 years so much time with him. But I would never have been able to do that if I didn't have my own business. And so, you know, I'd drive into all his chemo sessions and we would, you know, stick a CD in the car and it would be a really funny comedy one and stuff. And we'd be like in tears laughing there and back. And, you know, I'm so grateful that I was able to be able to do that. You know, and I know a lot of people aren't able to do that. And, you know, I think that my nan would be looking down and thinking, yeah, you know what, I would want them to know that I love them, but also I'd want them to feel that they're very proud of what I'm doing and what I've achieved.
Another pause for station identification and shameless promotion. This episode is also brought to you by Finley Cars of Las Vegas. I tell you, next level in the car buying experience, and not only that, but the life of your car, the service that you're going to experience is incredible. It's Finley Volvo Cars LV.com. And also brought to you by Bling Shine Serum, the only product on the market that will add weightless moisture, strength, and shine, and the only product that has the endorsement of my mama. When I showed her all the features and benefits, she smelled it, and she said, "This is the greatest product that you've ever done." And I thought, "Mom, do you not look at the features and benefits?" She said, "No, if it smells like that, it must work." And I tell you, every single woman needs a little bit of bling in their life, and this can be purchased at KellyCardenasSalon.com. What do you think they didn't hear enough from you? Like, if you got a chance to be able to sit down with them and, you know, I mean, obviously we have feelings in our heart, right? So I have feelings in my heart for my wife. I have in my heart for my daughter and my son. I try and express them as much as possible. And I started to do a little something in these last couple of months where I actually, you know, with my daughter, I got a journal and then I write a letter to her every day. And at the end of the week, then she gets the journal, she reads seven letters, and then I do it again. And what it started to do is it started to tap into just the little things. Like this morning I got to write to her, and you know, I walked into her room, and as I was leaving, she whispered something, and I turned around and I said, "Well, you know, what'd you say, baby?" And she said, "I just said I love you." And you know, I got to write about that today and thank her, because the little hugs that she gives me when she comes up and just wraps her arms around me. And same thing with my wife. Like, she was leaving yesterday just for the day, but she made sure that everyone was good before she left. And I got to write about that today. But I didn't tell her about, and I do that same journal thing with my wife too. And I write seven letters a week, give it to her at the end of the week, and then she's able to enjoy them. But sometimes I don't tell her in the moment. If you had that moment with Nan, and you had it with your pop, and you had it with your mom, what would those things, what would some of the things that you would say? I mean, I know that you said, "Thank you." But what would be some of the things that you would say to them that maybe they didn't hear enough?
Well, I never said I love them very, you know, as much as I should do, really. And I never used to hug people that much. I would hug the life out of people now. I hug the life out of people now. And you know, the person that had such an amazing effect, positive effect on me on that side of things is my wife, Maria. She said, "Hugs are important." First thing, probably one of the first things she ever said to me when we first met, she said, "Hugs are really important." So, you know, and I've taken that philosophy on ever since. And you know, we've been married next year is our 25th wedding anniversary. You know, so I mean, she's just my English rose. She is just beautiful. And, you know, we've got two daughters, you know, they're 21 and 17 now, and they're just amazing and so beautiful and kind and caring and gorgeous. But I think, you know, I would want to hug them. Sounds so weird, but I missed that hug with my dad. My dad was a big man, and he was just huge, not huge heart. He had a huge heart, and I get a lot of attributes from him. You know, he was very kind. He'd do anything for anybody. And I think that's kind of where he'd want to uplift people. He was an uplifter rather than a, you know, and I get that from him, you know, cause I like uplifting people. And that's one of the reasons why I like podcasts like yours, and why I like to do the podcast and stuff, because it's not just about me putting out a podcast. It's about lifting those people up, you know, so and making them feel good. Even if they're the only person that listened to the podcast, I don't care. They're going to feel great. You know, they're going to feel fantastic after they've listened to it. But after they get over the, "Oh my God, I don't like my voice" part, you know, like you always do when you listen to your own voice. But once they've got through that stage, you know, they're going to think, "Oh, this is amazing. That's so great." And actually, you know what? The way you're talking about your daughter, the fact that you're just doing this podcast is amazing. And I think that, you know, she's going to look back in a few years, because the podcast isn't about now. This is about, you know, 50 years, 100 years time down the road, when your daughter is a grandmother and she's telling you her grandchildren to listen to great grandpa Pops Kelly on this podcast, have a listen to this. It's amazing. Can you imagine?
Well, I think it'll be, I think it'll be amazing, man. And I mean, you really, honestly, like I go back to the first conversation that we had and it was just on the phone and I felt like I saw you. Like, I mean, you have the ability, Steve, to make people feel so comfortable, and at home. Why is it so important for you to leave that chair at the table better than the way that you found it?
Because it means then that you've, like I said at the beginning, when you do something, you've got to give it 100%. Okay. So if you leave that chair in a better condition, you know that you've given your best, you've given it everything, you've given it 100%. Okay. There might be a few days where you've given it 75% or 80%, but, or, you know, you've had some off days or whatever, but you know, playing the long game at the end of the day, if you do everything that you can to the best of your ability, that chair is going to be in such a better position. And that goes, I mean, that could be anything. That could just be having such a, you know, having a positive effect on your children. Yeah. You know, it could be anything. That it just, if they benefit from your insight and wisdom and direction and instructions to make good choices, you know, and guidance, then they're going to take over that chair and they're going to progress it and they're going to take it on and things, you know what I mean? That's kind of where I'm at.
Well, I wish more people would take on that thought process, because once you go into that, when you expose me to that and you expose me to that and I go back to it over and over again in this conversation, but our first conversation, you really made me want to just continue to do better and leave it better. And I find that when we're in that mind state, we're constantly looking at ourselves. We're looking at, you know, we're being mindful of the things. And this was a game changer for me. And I want you to, you know, tell me where your thought process is on it. Is I researched the word nice, and the word nice was out of obligation. Because you thought that you needed to do something, being nice. And I looked at the definition of it. And then I looked at the definition of kind, and it was to be of contribution to somebody. And it hit me because I always link the two words together. And for me, Steve, you're not nice. You're kind.
Yes, thank you.
And yeah, that's something that literally will change everything around you, is being kind. Can you, I mean, what is your thoughts on the difference between the nice part and the kind part?
I kind of get that, the kind thing. I, you know, because that then kindness is not just about you being, it puts you in the mindset of helping other people. If you're kind, it's really not all about you. It's about other people. And so I would encourage people to be kind, obviously, but also I think really if you want to be kind, go out and do something with your community, right? Go out and do something. Put your head above the parapet and do something, you know. So like 3 years ago I stood for election in our local town council, right? Because I wanted to try and make a difference. So, you know, we were talking about cycling. We have things in the UK where there's so many cars, right? Active travel with cycling and walking is really important, and it's great for your health. Okay, so we want to enable people to do more of that. And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to, that's why I ran for election in our local council. It's not political or anything like that. Please don't get me, you know, I'm not like a political animal or anything like that. I just want to help, right? And make a difference in the community, you know. Go and, if you've got a local museum, go and apply to be a trustee for the museum and really make, try and put I'm a trustee for our local museum in our town. And it's an incredible thing. It's just a beautiful, beautiful museum. And we've got a lot of history in our town. And it's a fantastic thing to do to try and promote people to come into your town and see the museum and stuff. And so, yeah, you know, kindness comes on all different levels. But if you wanted to take some action on being kind, then A, do the right thing and make the right choices and be kind to people. But if you want to make a slightly bigger difference, then see what you can do within the community.
Steve, when has it ever When have you had a delayed result or no result in being kind? Meaning that, you know, I think a lot of times people, again, will dispel, right? Especially in business, especially like go-getters, like, you know, that like the sharks. They'll say like, oh, you know, being kind, you'll get eaten alive and you need to go after this and that. And sometimes what I've found is when you are kind, you end up making less at the particular time. Now, I've always seen in the long game, it always works out. But can you talk to us about maybe a specific instance where you were kind and it cost you money or it cost you market share? Because I think that those things are the realities when you're thinking long game, you know? I say, for instance, I just had a guest the other day in the salon. His name is Michael. And Michael's an amazing man. And he was on the schedule and I blanked. And this was awful of me. It was on Friday. I blanked. He showed up to the place. He drove 45 minutes, and I wasn't there. And he drove 45 minutes home. Well, I called him, and I could tell he was a little bit angry, but I knew the right thing to do was not only to reschedule him at his convenience, no matter where when it was for me. I didn't care. I was rescheduling anything. But also to be able to take care of the service. And make sure that I was taking no money from this man ever because it was more about the relationship than it was about the transaction. Now, on that day, it cost me. I know down the line it won't. Can you talk to us about a time where maybe it's been delayed or you just haven't seen the result in being kind?
Well, I think there's two sides to that, really, because when things go wrong, it's always an opportunity. It's always an opportunity. And it's how you recover is critical. Okay, so, but also, and one thing that I've always been taught is that if there's been a problem and your client is unhappy and you rectify the situation, they're nine times stronger clients or something, or you know what I mean? They become true advocates, real ambassadors because they they trust you and more than if they hadn't have had a problem. But in terms of a real, in terms of a real life example, I mean, I've had loads. Oh my, you know, where a hotel that has come back and said it's booked and confirmed, and the clients arrived and the hotel hadn't been booked and confirmed. And so we've had to book another hotel. We've booked another hotel at our expense, and it was more expensive. Okay, it was a better hotel because when you're on holiday, you just want to be on holiday. Having a problem when you're abroad is a big issue. Right. And it takes big gestures to be able to get you back on the right track, if you know what I mean. Okay. Because otherwise everything else becomes a problem. You know what I mean? The barman might not make the best mojito or, you know, that's a big problem. You know, that kind of thing. So little things that would normally go unnoticed become big problems. So what we've done is, you know, we had to pay to get this hotel sorted out. And then we would speak to the hotel that made the mess and say, you've got to contribute to this because this is your problem. You know, so first and foremost, get the client sorted out. So yeah, that cost us quite a bit of money, but it didn't cost us in reputation because the client felt that we looked after them. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, Steve, if you were, your daughters are 21 and 20,
21, 17,
21 and 17. This was a morbid question that was asked to me, and it really made me think. It made me mad at first because I was like, how are you going to go there? Because now I'm thinking about it. But if you were on your deathbed and your two daughters are in the room, you've only got three pieces of advice to tell them before you expire. What are those three pieces of advice?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, oh my God. The three things.
Only three. At three, and then you tap out and you go home and be with Jesus.
Kelly, you know, it's all about this is terrible for a podcast because there's so many gaps and
no, I love it. It's real as can be. I mean, most people don't. The reason why I say it too is because most of us, we don't think about it, right? We don't think about those things. And you know, that made me have to think, like, you know, what would be those things that I would say to my kids, you know? So the pauses are okay, man. I'm not going to edit them.
I would want them to love their life and love the people that they're in their life and appreciate. I would want them to live their life with gratitude. You know, and I think that's really important. You know, just being grateful for even the small things, you know. Don't, I'm not talking about the big things in life, you know. I would want them to not have any regrets and also, and this is a big thing for me because, well, A, you put me on the spot, but actually thinking about it, this is a big thing. And I would say is never fear failure. Okay. Embrace it because it's a really cool thing. You know, as long as you embrace it and you appreciate it and learn from it and just treat, if things do go wrong, it's an opportunity. Is that three or four? I don't know.
Well, it was awesome. It was awesome is what it was. And
having a hot flush.
Steve, 25 years of marriage.
Yes.
You love your wife.
I love my wife. I love my wife dearly. Do you know, I've got a really fascinating story. I don't know. How long have we got? I don't know.
Go.
Oh, okay. So listen, you know, we're talking about one thing I love is like these golden threads that connect people, you know, the golden threads that sort of make their tapestry of their life, right? So it's 1987 and I've got my first job in travel and I'm selling holidays to Florida. It's the best job. For a 17, 18 year old, the best job of selling holidays and sending people out to Orlando, you know, to see Mickey Mouse and LA and you know, road trips and New York and Boston, all that sort of brilliant, fantastic job. Right. And when I was selling holidays, we would always have to make sure that the clients were properly insured so that they were covered, you know, so if there's cancellations, if they were ill on holiday and stuff like that, they had everything properly insured, right? So the insurance company was a company called Derek Fisher and Partners Insurance, right? And so I've been selling this guy's insurance left, right, and center, okay, for 3 or 4 years. I then get headhunted to another company and I start work there, right? And about 6 months later, in walks this lady, right? And she had the opportunity about 3 weeks before that, before she walked through that door, she had the opportunity to work for the company that I'm working for at the moment at that time, or she could become a legal secretary in London. Right. But she chose to work for the travel company. She walks in the door, sits down next to me. And I think, wow, she's nice. And 7 years later, we're married. But the cool thing is, right, is that her surname is Maria Fisher and her dad was the guy whose insurance I was selling when I was 17 and 18. How weird is that?
That's amazing, man.
No, she's amazing. She is just my rock. She's just so great. Maria is so brilliant. In 2004, when I said to her, I think I'd like to start our own business. What do you think? She said, go for it. I mean, how amazing is that? I'm so lucky.
So do me the favor, Steve, look into the camera right now and tell her something that she doesn't hear enough from you.
Oh, God, Kelly, you're an amazing host. Oh, my God. Maria, I just want you to know that I love you. I appreciate everything that you do for me and for the girls. And I'm looking forward to the next 25 years of our life together. I know it's going to be amazing, and I can't wait. Thank you. I love you.
Steve, you know why I started the podcast, because of two little individuals that steal my heart and have stole my heart. My daughter told me the other day, and she tells me often, she's like, I made you a dad. She's 12 years old. She's McKenna, and she has the biggest heart in the whole world. She loves on everything. I tell a story about when she was little tiny. She grabbed an avocado seed. She didn't put it in the glass with the toothpicks to wait till the roots came. She just took it and dug a hole in our front yard and just put it in there and grew an avocado tree. It wasn't potter soil. It wasn't anything, but she went out and she loved on this seed every single day. And anything that she does, anything that she touches comes to life. And I realized it's because she loves every single thing that she touches. So she's the artist in our family, biggest heart. She's just incredible. There's Maddox, who's a wild man. He's 9 years old. And he, my favorite, well, I have, I can't say my favorite story, but one of my favorite stories about him is he woke up the other day, and right when he woke up, like immediately, he raised his hand, Steve, and said, I did it, and loud. And I was like, I mean, what'd you do? And he looked at me and he said, I woke up. It's his spirit. That's what he, he's 100 in every single thing that he does. So I made the podcast for them because I wanted to take iconic people like yourself and I wanted to humanize them. I wanted them to not see Steve Odie as one of the top podcasters in the world, not Steve Odie, the man who can make you travel and have the greatest adventures in the world. Not Steve Odie, who's an entrepreneur and who has been so successful at so many things. But Steve Odie is a human being, just like them. And if they want to become the top in travel in the world, if they want to become the top, one of the top podcasters in the world, they have to have two things. One, a positive attitude, which you've already shown, and number two, hard work, which you show every single day. So what advice would you have for Maddox and McKenna? And if you could use their names, it would be amazing.
Maddox and Mackenzie.
McKenna,
sorry. So Maddox and McKenna, I would say, if you're going to do anything in your life and you needed an example as to how to do it and what to do, then you just need to just look at one person in your life. And that's your father. Okay, because he is an outstanding human being who I have the great privilege of knowing and have spent some time, a very short amount of time, but I feel like I've known him for a long, long time. And I would say that follow your father and follow his energy. I'm not making much sense here, kids, but just be the best that you can be every day, and you can't go wrong.
Steve, I want to thank you. You have overwhelmed the expectation. You know, getting to speak to you the first time, hearing the optimistic part of you. But a lot of times people like I learned from a lady named Terry Cowan and Steve. Terry Cowan is married to Steve Cowan. The two of them, you should have them on your podcast. These two are amazing. And what they asked one time, they went to stay at a hotel and they got really phenomenal service. And they called down to the front desk and they said, is this grand opening service or is this something I can expect as I move forward in my relationship with you? And what it hit me was there were so many people in life that have grand opening service. There's so many people that when you meet them, they're shiny, they're happy, everything is good. And then you hang out with them for a while and then you start to see. And that, not to say that reality doesn't hit, but what I want you to understand is today I experienced something that wasn't grand opening service. I experienced something that I know that I can count on for the rest of my life in my relationship with you, and not from a standpoint of that you have to be perfect, but that you're going to look for the great things in even the garbage that happens within your life.
Oh, thank you.
And Steve, I want to thank you so much. So everyone out there listening, you know, I mean, you know who you need to follow now. If you're traveling around the world and you need to check this guy out, you need to listen to his podcast. You need to support it in every way, shape, and form. And also, you need to share it with every single one of your friends, because I think that the more people that hear Steve's voice, the better and better this world will be. You need to click the links. You need to subscribe. You need to do all the things that you know you need to do. And I'll emphasize it again. Share this. Share this with every single person that you know. The optimistic people, the pessimistic people, the people that are breathing, share it with them, because Steve has not only made an impact today, but he's making an impact every single day. And I want to thank you again, Steve, for being on the show, man.
Thank you so much, Kelly. And I look forward to you coming over to the UK and retracing your footsteps of your father when he was over here. At the, oh, is it Lake and Heath or somewhere?
Yes, sir. Lake and Heath. And we're gonna ride bikes. We're going like you talk about. I'm going spandex, but we're going full spandex. That's going to take our relationship to that whole other level, man. And, you know, like I said, my hat's off to you, man. And I'm going to force you to be my friend for the rest of your life, so you can't get rid of me.
Oh, bless you. You don't need to force. It's a done deal.
Steve, you're officially off the hot seat, my brother.